welcome everybody gathered across all of our locations and those of you who may be joining us online. We are thrilled to have you. If you have a Bible, go ahead and head over to 1 Kings chapter 18 and 19. 1 Kings 8 and 19 is in the Old Testament. That is going to be the passage that we're going to be walking through here in just a moment together. But before we do all that, I just want to make you aware of a couple things heading into this month. It is finally the month of May, and I love the month of May, especially in Indianapolis, because that means that we can finally go outside, and it just kind of seems like our city kind of comes to life during the month of May. Isn't that the case? You know, yesterday, how many of you ran the mini marathon yesterday? Any of the fellow crying out in pain right now? In fact, here in just a minute, I ran the mini, and here in just a minute, you're going to go back, man, Aaron just feels like he's really preaching with a lot of angst and passion. That's pain, right? That's pain. As I'm trying to recover from that, but that was yesterday. It all is going to culminate at the end of this month, Memorial Day weekend. And for those of us in Indy, that's race weekend. And so, yeah, we just want you to know that we have developed a special online-only service experience on Memorial Day weekend. A couple different reasons for that. Number one, there's some things that we can do online we can't always do in person. That would be the case here. Very similar to what we do with the last weekend of the year, that online service. And so I actually sit down with our very own Ed Carpenter, and we talk about life and leadership and faith and family. You're not going to want to miss that. Use that as an opportunity to invite friends and family, engage with others as you're out and about in the community. The other reason why we do that, and we're going to talk about this here in just a minute, is just recognizing the hundreds and hundreds of volunteers that we want to give Sabbath rest to. And so that's one of those weekends designated for that. So that's coming up on Memorial Day weekend. The week before that is Compassion Sunday. So we're going to highlight one of our Compassion partners in Compassion International child sponsorships that day. Next weekend, this is just your fair warning, it is Mother's Day. All right, so let's make sure that we celebrate our moms. There we go. Yeah, there we go. And we have a special guest speaker, Tiana Spencer, is going to be here to bring the message next week. You do not want to miss that message. But today, hard to believe, we are wrapping up this five-week series that we have been in called Weeds in My Garden. If you're just now joining us, this has been a message series on mental health. And I don't know exactly how that term hits you. You know, I don't know what your emotional response to that term is. Now, if you've been tracking with us through the series, hopefully it's a good one. Hopefully you have recognized that the statistics are real, that the Bible speaks to it a lot. But maybe you're just now joining us and you're like, I don't know, man. Like, is that really a thing? You know, do we make too much of it? It's kind of interesting because there would be three areas in which we would talk about how it's important to maintain health. Physical, spiritual, and mental or emotional. And there is unfortunately like a stigma that is oftentimes connected to mental health that isn't connected to the others. Here's what I mean. Like within Christian circles and especially at church, like if I would say to you, like, or if somebody comes up to you in your group or whatever, and they go, hey man, how's your spiritual health? Now you might be a little, that question might be a little bit uncomfortable, but there's not really a stigma attached to it. Like you would expect that question to be asked in church or group and you could talk about it and you know, be real about it. Especially this would be true with physical health. Man, we talk about our physical health all the time, don't we? Little aches and pains. You know, if I were to come up to you and be like, man, I've just been wrestling with these headaches. I've got a pulled muscle. I've got a popping in my jaw. There's no stigma to that. You wouldn't look at me and go, well, it sounds to me like you've got some unresolved sin issues in your life and you need to get right with God. Like that wouldn't be the case. Like you would be like, oh man, well, have you tried, you know, this aspirin or have you worked on this, you know, put this cream on your pulled muscle, whatever it is. There's no stigma attached to it. But unfortunately with mental health, there is. And it has oftentimes changed the conversation if we even have a conversation at all. So when we're struggling with our mental health, instead of just kind of being vulnerable about that, we sort of like stuff it, we numb it, we mask it, we cope with it in very unhealthy ways that just breeds more unhealth. Now, to avoid all that, we've just tried to be very frank and very honest about having this conversation. And I've heard from so many of you over the last few weeks. In fact, this message series quite possibly has had more positive response than any other series that I can remember preaching in recent memory. And I just want you to know this as we kind of, you know, put a period or an exclamation point on this series, that you are a whole person. Like, you know that, but like, I think we need to be reminded of it, that you are a body, soul, and mind. And I think that oftentimes, like within church, the main thing that we hear is soul, 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 soul. And rightfully so, man, that is eternal. God cares about your soul. And then not as often do we talk about body, and then hardly ever do we talk about mind. But God, I want to talk about body today and how it relates to your spiritual and physical health. And I want you to know that God cares about your mind and the health of it. In fact, Jesus would say this in Matthew chapter 22, verse 37. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul. And we would expect him to say that. But then he says this, but love him with all of your mind. And if your mind is unhealthy or you're struggling with your thoughts, you can't fully love God with your mind. In Ephesians chapter 6, Paul is urging the Ephesians to put on the full armor of God. Why? Because we are in a spiritual battle. We talked about that a few weeks ago. And one of the pieces of the armor is a helmet. The helmet of salvation. Proverbs says that as a man thinks, so is he. In other words, that your steps first start with your mind, the direction of your life, like decisions that you make, all of that culminates by some things that you think in your mind. So what this means is that if Satan wants to sabotage your life, he first sabotages your thoughts. And so we just gotta recognize how important this subject is. And maybe at one time or another, you fell into the line of thinking that said, you know what, if I were just more spiritual, if I was a better Christian, if I loved Jesus better, then I wouldn't have weeds in my garden. And I want you to know that that is not true. And I want you to know, as we look through the people in the scriptures that God used in powerful ways, every single one of them, without exception, had weeds in their garden. They all struggled with mental health. And it didn't mean that they weren't loving God well. Didn't mean that they were doing the Christian thing horrible. It just meant that they were human. In fact, actually, we're gonna see this, that it could have meant that God was using them in a powerful way. And that is part of the reason why they struggled with their mental health, because there were adversaries coming against them. Because you and I are made on purpose for a purpose, and that's going to get resistance. So there's this guy named Jonah, and God called him to be a missionary to a really pagan city called Nineveh. Jonah didn't want to do it. You know, like, know the whole story. Jonah finally goes, and he preaches this sermon, and 120,000 people turn and give their lives to God. Now, I've preached a lot of sermons in my lifetime. I have never had that kind of response. And you would think that he would have a good day after that, but instead, Jonah struggles with his mental health, and he goes away and wishes he could die. Moses, like, he's used of God in this really powerful way, and he delivers the Israelites from Egyptian slavery, and then it says in that same book, right after that, he became overwhelmed and distraught. Like, if you didn't know any better, it's almost as if you could correlate the more you accomplish for God, the more God uses you, the more susceptible you might become to struggles in your mental health. Now, just because you love Jesus doesn't mean you're exempt from it. And just because you're following a Bible reading plan does not mean that there won't be pain. Just because you joined a rooted group doesn't mean there won't be valleys of darkness. Just because you're serving in a ministry doesn't mean that there won't be storms. But here's what it does mean. It means that after the storm passes, and it will, after the storm passes, you're still standing. That's what that means. And so I hope that if there are weeds in your garden, that you realize this is not a sign that you are failing spiritually. It's a sign that you're a human being living in a fallen world, and God has called you to a purpose. And there is a spiritual battle being waged for your body, your soul, and your mind. And we no longer need to hide the weeds in our garden. Instead, we can say, yep, there's weeds in my garden, but I have given my life to, and I follow the master gardener. That's what we can say. Now, as we were kind of laying out this message series, hopefully you've seen, if you've been tracking with us, the last few weeks have been highly, highly practical. High application, as we've chosen to just tackle some topics like head on. And those topics are not random. The reason why we landed on those topics is because you said those are the things that you're struggling with. If you don't know what I'm talking about, right before Easter, we did a poll. We pulled 5,000 of you from our church, and you just kind of shared with us some of your top struggles. The top struggle mentioned at 72% was anxiety and depression. And we talked about that last week. That's why we did. And then number two, coming in right behind it, you could even say it tied it because it was at 71.6% was stress and burnout. And this was especially true of men. 68% of men in our church said, yep, that's my top struggle. Anxiety and depression for ladies, they said that was their top. For men, it was stress and burnout. And so what I want to do today is I want to talk about those two things, but I want to, first of all, distinguish the differences. There are overlaps between stress and burnout. I think sometimes we throw them into the same category. I don't think that's very helpful. They're different. So let me offer this definition of stress. Stress is a state of mental or emotional strain or tension resulting from adverse or very demanding circumstances. Now, adverse and very demanding circumstances could include, but is not limited by, things like project and assignment deadlines, paying bills, changing diapers, sick kids at home, fixing the leaky faucet, folding laundry, mowing the yard, getting the oil changed, taking the call, dealing with the frustrated customer, responding to criticism, having the hard conversation, having the airline lose your luggage. That may have hypothetically happened to me a couple weeks ago. Getting a flat tire, filing taxes, cleaning up after the dog, and cleaning up after your husband. In other words, life. Right? That's just life. Like, stress is a part of life. Doing multiple hard things at once to keep your household going and to keep your life going is just a part of life. And that stress is like that tension against the adverse circumstances that we all experience. And let me say this, not all stress is bad. Some stress is good, and stress ebbs and it flows. Some stress is situational. It's the unexpected or the untimely. Some stress is seasonal. It's certain time of day, certain time of week, certain time of year. It rises and it falls depending upon the season or depending upon what you do for a living or your family dynamics. And part of, if I could use this word, adulting, is understanding and developing really a certain amount of resilience, responsibility, fortitude, and grit to navigate the stresses of life. And if you don't, when life gets challenging, you'll fold. When life gets challenging, you avoid, you blame, you numb to the stresses that just naturally arise. Actually, growing into a responsible adult is really a process in leaning into the stresses that come and developing sure feet and sort of like a thick skin around some of those things. And we see stress all through the Bible. King Saul was a guy that had accomplished a lot. He was well-respected, but we begin to see as he grows older that the stress eventually begins to get to him, especially when it comes to succession planning, because his identity, like so many of us, it's not just men, but a lot of men wrestle with this. Women wrestle with it too. But we can wrestle with what we do. We tie that up in our identity. That's what Saul did. And so Saul's like, he couldn't distinguish between what he did and who he was. And so then when he's starting to get up there in years, he brings in his successor, a guy by the name of David, who begins to outshine him. And then to make matters worse, the people start singing songs about David and Saul. And here was the lyric to the song. Oh, Saul has killed his thousands, David his tens of thousands. And Saul's like, I'm irrelevant. And he was stressed and he didn't manage it well. And his whole life unraveled in a tragic way. He did not finish well. And you go to a guy like Moses. Moses gets utterly frustrated with the people. He goes up on Mount Sinai. God gives him the Ten Commandments. He comes down. He sees the Israelites have lost their minds. They're partying. They're worshiping golden calf. He takes these Ten Commandments, throws them to the ground and shatters them. That was a moment of stress. Elijah, who we're going to read about in a minute, he asks a single mom for some food in the middle of a famine. That would have been stressful. But she's stressed. And you can tell by her response to him. She says, well, I'm going to make one last meal for me and my child. And then I'm going to die. That's what stressful people say. Jesus even experienced stress. And some of you are like, really? Like, how so? He was always retreating. He was always going away to replenish. When we look at the creation account, there is a reason why God created Sabbath rest. This is like preventative maintenance to even keep us from this place where the wheels end up coming off. Now, I say all that to say this. Nothing wrong with you if you're feeling some stress. That is totally normal. The problem is not work. We were made to work. Work preceded the fall. Work is not the curse of sin. Sin has just complicated the work. The problem isn't the demands or the deadlines. People depend upon us to fulfill what we said we would do at the time that we said we would do it. The problem arises when we don't manage the stress well. We don't do preventative maintenance. We don't develop rhythms and routines and pay attention to replenishment cycles. And I think many of us think that it's either an on or an off switch. But it's like, no, we've actually got to develop rhythms to the way in which we work. Think about it like maintenance on your car. Your car was not made to stay parked in the garage. Your car was made to run. Your car was made to get out on the road. Your engine was made to start. But when it does, it creates friction. That's stress on the engine. There's moving parts. It heats up. And then you've got to take your car in to get an oil change. You got to take care of it in order to keep it on the road longer. You are no different. You were made to run. God made you on purpose, for a purpose, to be productive, to provide, and to protect. You were made to create and to contribute, but not without regular maintenance. And if you run full out, open accelerator, never replenish, you're not paying attention to the gauges on your emotional, spiritual, or physical dashboards, you will eventually break down. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And the word for that is burnout. Now, let me define burnout. Burnout is a psychological syndrome that occurs as a result of chronic stress. Now, the reason why I threw that word in there is because it's not just a result of stress. Stress is a part of life. But chronic stress, where you've not been Sabbathing. You've not been developing routines and rhythms to maintain your emotional, physical, spiritual health. And it becomes chronic. In other words, you're so stressed and you get to this place where you just think it's normal, but it's not normal. And then you eventually break down in one of those three categories, emotionally, spiritually, or physically. Here are some words that are used to describe what burnout feels like. Exhaustion, cynicism, detachment, ineffectiveness, lack of accomplishment, alienation, numbness, feeling useless, feeling powerless, and feeling empty. Here's a chart behind me. You can maybe take a picture with your phone. We get this filled in. Kind of the differences between stress and burnout. Stress is over-engagement, but burnout is disengagement. Stress is overactive emotions. Burnout is blunted emotions. You just don't feel anything. Stress is urgency or hyperactivity. Burnout is detached or lethargic. Stress is a loss of energy. Burnout is loss of motivation and hope. Stress is physical wear. Burnout's emotional wear. Stress is a need to slow down, but burnout is you're unable to start up. Now, as you look at that graph, some of you, like, this is maybe hitting you right where you live, and you realize that you fit the description, not of the left category, but of the right. And you're like, man, I'm burned out, or I'm dangerously close to this, and you're not quite sure what to do about it, which can lead us into further isolation and masking, or we deal with it in really unhealthy ways, like we just like ignore it, numb it, deny it. We develop addictions over a substance or a behavior to try to cover it up, and you just like drive and drive and drive and drive and ignore and ignore and ignore until you break. So when I was in college, the catalytic converter in my car went out. I didn't know what a catalytic converter was then. I still don't know. And I knew, like, the little red light came on my dashboard, and I knew I was going to need to take it in, but I was afraid to take it in because I didn't know how expensive it was going to be to fix it, and I didn't have any money because I was just a poor college student, so I didn't have the money to pay for it. But I did have money to purchase black tape, like a whole roll of it. And I went to the store and I bought some black tape and I cut a little piece just big enough to cover the little red light on the dashboard. Problem solved. Like, I didn't have to see the light anymore. The car started every time. It ran okay. I was like, that little pesky light's not there to bother me. Until one day I was driving home. I was on the interstate going about 70 miles an hour and I hear a large popping sound and the accelerator dropped all the way to the floor. But the car slowed down. The max speed was about 40 miles an hour. and I looked in the rearview mirror, black smoke was billowing out the back. Now, you would think, being as, you know, bright as I am, that I would have pulled over. Oh, no. Oh, no. Here's what I did. I firmly fixed my hands at 10 and 2, and I leaned forward like this, and I just kept the accelerator all the way down, and I was like, I got about 40 miles to go that I can get back into town. Like, I think it's going to be okay. And I just kept going and going and going, black smoke billowing out the back, and this older couple in a Buick pulls up right beside me. They're driving parallel on the interstate. Top speed, about 40 miles an hour. I don't think it's because their car was broke. I just think that's how fast they drove. And we're just like driving down, and I can tell that they're trying to flag me down, and I'm ignoring them. Like, I can see out of my peripheral, and I didn't want to face it. And so I just could say like this. I don't know what good this was doing, but I was like willing the car down the road. And finally, I was like, okay, I'll just look over it. And I looked over, and she was so sweet. And she was looking at me, and she was like, and here's what I did. I said, I know, right? And I just kept going, right? Now, I don't think I need to even tell you how that illustration ends. It ended eventually with me on the side of the road, fluids pouring out of the bottom of the car, and it wouldn't even start. Now, when I had it towed into the shop, the guy was like, what were you thinking, man? He's like, if you would have brought this in, it would have been a fraction of the cost, but now you've got all this additional expense because, like, pretty much, like, you blew all kinds of stuff, in your engine. And you know what? You and I are no different. Yeah. Like, the little light comes on, and you take the black tape, and you just kind of cover it however you want to do that, masking it with a substance, masking it with more work, masking it by just pretending it's not there, masking it with this word, I'm fine. And you just kind of put it over the dash, and you're just like, 10 and 2, man. It's like, just get me across the finish line. Let me close the deal. Let me retire. Let me graduate the kids. Let me get to the end of this season. And then people are trying to flag you down. And you're not, I don't even want to pay attention to that because you're telling me things I don't want to hear. And so what ends up happening is eventually you completely crash and burn. And it's even more costly than it would have been if you would have just gotten a little bit of the regular maintenance. Can I just say this? When it comes to stress and burnout in your life, it's going to cost you something to address it. You choose the cost. It's either short-term pain or long-term pain. And it is far better to choose the short-term pain, the inconvenience, that maybe it's going to be the investment of counseling, or it's going to be the investment of healthy processes and developing disciplines or going to the gym or eating better or whatever it's going to be. Now, here's really why this message is so critical. I want to be really clear about this. When I'm talking about stress and burnout, I'm talking about like monitoring your dashboards, your physical, spiritual, mental, I'm not just talking about self-care. And I'm not talking about ensuring that you have a good energy level. You just feel good. Although those things are important, would never minimize it. Here's why this is important. When you are stressed out to the point of burnout, that's when you make some of your dumbest decisions. That's when you blow up a marriage. That's when you sabotage a career. That's when you wind up with a permanent record. You're not thinking clearly. You're stressed. That's when you say things you don't mean, but you said it, and now your loved one's gonna remember it forever. It's gonna leave a mark. Oftentimes, I'll be talking to leaders in certain circles, and they're so stressed. They're so much under pressure, and they don't know where the off-ramp is. So they make a decision to blow up their lives just to get off the road. And by that time, the shrapnel of their decision hits all the people around them, and it hurts everybody. So what we want to do, stress is a part of life. When you see the red light come on the dashboard, you don't cover it. You say, you know what? I need to actually develop some rhythms and replenishments in order to stay at a high level so that spiritually, emotionally, physically, I can stay filled up to do what it is that God has tasked me to do. And your loved ones need you to be there. We need you to be there. The kingdom of God needs you to be there to be at your absolute best. You cannot eliminate stress. What you can do is be intentional about recovery and replenishment. And it's more practical than you think. I think oftentimes we're looking for like this like big kind of huge like mysterious aha kind of a thing. And what we see in the passage is that God is just extremely practical. Now, I want to look at Elijah's life here. Elijah, if you don't know anything about him, he was a prophet, and prophets in the Old Testament were some of the most stressed out dudes in the Bible, because their job was to deliver bad news to bad people every day. You wanna talk about stress? And they made a lot of enemies, and these enemies wanted to kill them, and so these were the occupational hazards of being a prophet. They couldn't get anybody to approve a life insurance policy for them. That joke didn't work any hour. All right, sorry. Gosh, I was really confident in you guys. I think it was the delivery. All right, so anyway, his story is in 1 Kings, and here's what God called Elijah to do. Elijah goes to deliver bad news to an evil king named Ahab. The only thing more evil than Ahab was his wife, a lady by the name of Jezebel, and she hated Elijah. And his first assignment was to deliver a message of a coming drought and famine that would last for years. That didn't get him any friends. And by the way, Elijah would be part of the, he would suffer from this drought as well. Tons of stress. Requires him to move to a different country, tons of stress. When the drought came, the water dried up, there was no food, he was forced to put his trust in God, and he relied upon a Gentile woman who was a single mom. Stress. Her son dies, falls on Elijah's shoulders to bring him back to life. Stress. A guy named Obadiah comes to him and he tells him, he says, hey man, Ahab has sent these headhunters to come get you, and he's not relenting. Look at verse 10 of chapter 18. As surely as the Lord your God lives, there is not a nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to look for you. And whenever a nation or kingdom claims you were not there, he made them swear they could not find you. In other words, Ahab is not going to rest until you are dead, Elijah. And that was multiple months of all of that. And then there's it kind of all culminates with actually sort of like a spiritual victory. And if you've never read this story, I want to encourage you to go read it later today. It's one of my favorite stories in the Bible. Elijah challenges King Ahab and the prophets of his false god Baal, there were 450 of them, to a duel, like an old-fashioned, you know, Western duel. It's so great. There would have been tumbleweed and everything. And what happens is that they build an altar, put an animal on it, build another altar, put an animal on it, and Elijah says, here's the deal. Why don't you pray to all 450 of your false gods and see if they send fire to consume the altar? And then when that doesn't work, I'll pray to the one true God and watch him send fire to consume. And so, man, they start praying like Elijah lets them go first. You know, they start praying, they're tearing their clothes, you know, they're doing everything and nothing is happening. And I love it because this is where trash talking gets born. Elijah starts talking trash, and I get to this visual that he's standing there with his feet crossed like this, maybe, you know, doing a little toothpick, and he just goes, man, nothing's happening here. Why don't you guys shout a little louder? And then you can read this in the text. He goes, maybe your false gods are asleep. And then here's my favorite. He goes, maybe they're relieving themselves. It's just so good, man. It's in the scriptures, all right? And so all that happens, nothing goes down, and then Elijah prays, boom, God consumes the altar with fire. It's amazing. And then right after that, God sends the clouds and the rain, it ends the drought. You would think that Elijah would just be like on cloud nine, like, yay, we did it, it's amazing. Not exactly. This is after years and years and years of stress and him not really managing it all that well. It didn't matter that he had this spiritual victory. He burns out. Look at chapter 19, verses 1-5. Now King Ahab told Jezebel, his wife, everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, may the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them. If you don't know what she just said, she basically is just giving him 24 hours to live. She's like, I'm coming after you and I want you dead. And here was Elijah's response. He was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there. While he himself went on a day's journey into the wilderness, he came to a broom brush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. Now here's the statement. I have had enough, Lord. That's what burnout sounds like. I've had enough. take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. That is imposter syndrome, negative self-talk right there. It's not true. It's what he felt. In verse 5, then he lay down under the brush or under the bush and fell asleep. That's a picture of burnout. He is emotionally exhausted. If you read on in verse 9, he no longer feels effective, so he hides in a cave. In verse 10, he feels all alone and isolated when he declares, I'm the only one left. He is in complete despair. He asks God to take his life. And all of that is after a huge spiritual mountaintop victory experience. And oftentimes, that's the way it works. I've just gotten used to it. Like, I know, like, coming into, like, Christmas services, Easter services, worship nights, anything on the calendar that looks like it might be a spiritually mountaintop experience, I make sure I not only get prayed up for the ascend, I make sure I'm prayed up for the descend. Because that's where the enemy will get you. You come down off of the spiritual, you come back from the conference, you come back from the camp, you come back from the thing, and you're like all fired up, and then all of a sudden your adrenals calm down, and then Satan pounces. And oftentimes we make our worst decisions after spiritual mountaintop experiences. Guys, I almost experience this every single Sunday afternoon. I come down after preaching, and it's like I just feel probably the most dense spiritual attack on Sunday afternoons. It's just the way this spiritual battle has a tendency to work, and we can be our most vulnerable to temptation and make some of our most foolish decisions. And this is what Elijah is going through. God has used him in incredible ways, but he's a human and he's spent. Now, here's what I want you to see, that in the midst of that moment, God meets Elijah right where he is at in it, and he walks him through it and out of it. And right now, if you're feeling stress, like chronic stress, or even you're going, you know what, there's no doubt about it, I'm burned out. I want you to hear this. God will meet you in it, and he will walk you through it, maybe in ways that you haven't anticipated, because we expect maybe God to move in these big, dramatic things. God will move in the more subtle. And we see this in the case of Elijah. And what God says to Elijah is extremely practical, so practical, we have a tendency oftentimes, I'm trying to think of the last time I even heard a message that's gonna talk about some of the things I'm gonna talk about here in just a minute. See, the best time to address burnout is before you need to. That's always better. That's called preventative care. The best way to recover from burnout is by taking a deep breath, diagnosing your dashboards, and asking God to meet your needs. And here's the first place where God begins with Elijah. God met his physical needs. Look at chapter 19, verses 5 through 8. So remember where Elijah was, passed out under the bush. All at once, an angel touched him and said, get up and eat. Notice the angel didn't say, hey, get up and pray. Hey, get up and read your Bible. Get up and do your devotions, all great things. That's not what the angel starts with. The angel starts with eating. Praise God. That's one of my favorite things to do. And in verse 6, it says, he looked around and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals. Bread, it wasn't a protein, it wasn't a vegetable, it wasn't a fruit, it was carbs. Praise Jesus for gluten. All right, it's just, right. You've got a scripture and a verse right there. And a jar of water. I don't know, I'm sure it probably had electrolytes in it or something. And so it says this, he ate and he drank and then he prayed. No, he ate and drank, then he laid down again, took another nap. And then it says the angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you. And so Elijah got up and he ate and he drank. Here's what I want you to see. Is that you've got three dashboards, emotional, spiritual, physical. You cannot separate them. They are integrated, and if one is down or struggling, it's going to affect the others. God knows that. So Elijah's tanks are empty emotionally and spiritually and physically, but the way that God chooses to fill the emotional and spiritual tank is he fed him first. He paid attention to the physical. Now, here's why this is so important. is that until your physical needs are met, then you're not going to be able to address the emotional and the spiritual. Now, this is the part of the message that I really wrestled with a little bit, because there's always any preacher that's listening to this will know there's a fine line between practical application and then putting my nose in business that where it doesn't belong, right? Meddling. And this, it could border on that, but I'm gonna go ahead and do it, all right? So it's the end of the series. So here's kind of the three questions I just want you to consider, right? And this is just for you, not up to me or anybody else to answer these for you. You answer these on your own. Are you eating right? Are you getting enough exercise? Are you getting enough quality sleep? Occasionally, I will have people either come into my office or other leaders from other states will text me or call me and say, hey man, can I get a little bit of your time? I'm so stressed. I think I might be burned out. And I'm wanting to know from you, like, do I need some time off? Do I need a sabbatical? It's kind of interesting to me. It's like most of the time, that's usually where some of the first suggestions come of when we're dealing with like stress and burnout is, I think I just need time off. I think I need a sabbatical. Well, maybe. Maybe, but let's not start there. How about we start with this? Are you getting 10,000 steps a day in? Are you laying off the chicken chimichanga at midnight? And are you going to bed, right? Ooh, that got really quiet and awkward. It's a, I kind of feel like an Old Testament prophet right now. All right, So we need to start with the physical. Now I'm not saying this at you. I'm saying this because, man, I've learned this the hard way. My 20s, some of you can attest to this, my 20s were the hardest decade of my life. I hope I don't have another decade as hard as my 20s. My 20s to me felt like an extended adolescence, except the stakes were much higher. And, you know, I was newly married, trying to figure that out, had brought a couple little kids into the world, trying to care for them, and I was starting off, you know, in ministry, and really, honestly, all kinds of self-doubt. I didn't know if I had what it took, and I started a church on top of that, which is one of the hardest things you could do, and I had, like, a high metabolism. I was, like, a high school athlete, and so I just kind of thought that my metabolism would stay with me into my 20s, eating poorly and not exercising. And so I was, you know, meeting with all kinds of people. We were having lunches at Chinese buffets and you know, having all kinds of desserts with people. And I wasn't sleeping well, and I wasn't exercising, and I was overweight and underrested, and I was overstressed. And it really kind of culminated, and it was affecting me emotionally and spiritually. God felt distant. Sermons didn't have power. Like, I was so frustrated, struggling in all these different areas. And I'll never forget, it culminated for me. I was 29 years old, went to the doctor's office for my annual checkup, and I'm sitting there on that butcher paper. We have lots of doctors in our church. Why? So I'm sitting there on that butcher paper, and I got my shirt off, and I'm sitting there kind of like this, you know. And my doctor, who is annoyingly fit and good looking, walked in and he looked at me. I'll never forget this question. He looked at me and he goes, hey, Aaron, you think you could lose some weight? And I was like, now I do. And I hate your face. And I'm really glad that he said it, because it was kind of like a wake up, and it didn't happen all at once. It was sort of a turning point for me where I was like, you know, and now here's the thing. I want you to hear this. I think it's part of the reason why we don't talk enough about this in church. So you're like, well, what does this have to do with like the Bible and spiritual things? It has everything to do with it. And it didn't have anything to do with like vanity or getting six pack abs. It had everything to do with this. God pulled the curtain back and he said, Aaron, like, I've called you to something, and I want you to do something at a high level, and I want you to do it for a long period of time. And if you're 29 feeling this way, by the time you're 49, you're not going to be able to do what I've called you to do. And so it wasn't like a switch. It was just like a natural thing where I was like, okay, we got to figure out how to eat better, exercise. I've had to trial and error, backwards and forwards all throughout life. And I would just say the same thing to you. Like, I don't mean to meddle into your life, and not everything is for everyone. You got to figure out your own metrics, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And it's like, what is it that God has called me to do? And if you thought the first set of questions was meddling, these definitely are, all right? So buckle up. Have your blood work and hormone levels checked. I don't know how many people have said, man, I just feel like low energy and irritable, and you know, and I feel like I'm under spiritual attack. Well, maybe, but your hormone levels could be way off. and you need to get that stuff checked. Do your research on cold plunges and heat therapy. Yeah, I said it. Thank you, Dez. All right, so I said it. Now here's the part of the reason. I sit in a cold barrel of 38 degree water about 12 minutes a week, and I sit in hot boxes called saunas. People think I'm crazy for that. They're like, well, does that really help? I think that there's enough evidence to show that it does help with inflammation and all that kind of thing. Here's why I do it. I do it because sitting in 38 degree water for 3 minutes is the hardest thing I'll do all day. And it develops mental fortitude because then I can go in and have a hard, nobody clapped at that, right? I will go in, I will have a hard conversation. I'm like, well, it wasn't as hard as sitting in 38 degree water. And here's the deal. When it comes to cold plunges, this is the most common response I get. People go, I don't like cold water. Nobody likes cold water. That's the point. I hate it every time I get in it, but it develops mental fortitude, right? That's the part. Hey man, you can take that, you can leave it. All right, here's another one. Get an app that helps you track your physical metrics, heart rate, sleep, all that kind of stuff. For the record, this is a watch, this is not. Right? This tracks my metrics. Stop emailing me, all right? So, and pay attention to the sermon, not what I'm wearing. Here's the last one. Stretching and breath work. I threw that one in there for me because I stink at both those things. I'm as flexible as a 2x4 and I forget to breathe. All right, so you just kind of put that in there. Right, now listen, man, listen. Not all those things are for everybody, but you owe it to yourself to look into it because oftentimes we're looking at a spiritual dashboard when it's a physical. God fed Elijah. God let Elijah sleep and then he dealt with the emotional and the spiritual. You might need time off. Maybe not. I love what author Kerry Newhoff said about this. He goes, more time off isn't the solution when the problem is the way you spend time on. So you could take 3 months off and then come back to, you know, eating poor, not getting enough sleep, running yourself into the ground. You're just gonna need another 3 months off 3 months later. Here's the next thing, right? God broadened Elijah's perspective. And that's what you and I need. See, God asked him what he was doing there, and Elijah responds by feeling a little sorry for himself. And he says this, he goes, God, I've been very zealous for you. Translation, God, I've been putting in 50 plus hours a week for you. God, I've been working overtime for you, and I'm the only one left. I'm the only one that's been faithful, and now they're trying to kill me. And here's what God said to him. Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. That's a high wind. Listen, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. That's what God was in. And when Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Here's what that means. Most of the time when we are burned out, we are looking for some massive move of God. We're looking for the wind, we're looking for the earthquake, we're looking for the fire, and it's not that God can't and won't move in those ways, but most of the time he speaks and moves in a gentle whisper. And he says, I'm not asking you to like find me on some sabbatical in the mountains or a beach somewhere. I'm asking to meet with you in your living room or your front porch in the daily rhythms of your day, the gentle whisper. So I want you to hear this, man. Like when you gave your life to Christ, things don't just happen to you. They happen for you. And God wants to use some of those challenges and trials that some of you are walking in right now. He said, I know that it feels like this is coming against you, but I actually want to use this stress to strengthen you, and you can have this promise. You can take it to the bank. God will never take you through a valley where he doesn't return to you something of equal or greater value. It all depends upon where you're looking. And ultimately, there is hope. There is hope. No matter what it is that you're going through, you don't need to hide the weeds in your garden. I pray that this would be a church where we can be vulnerable, where we can say, hey man, this is what I'm going through. And then we can also recognize in the same breath, I follow and I serve and I give my life to the master gardener. And I want you to give the master gardener access to your garden by inviting him in, just asking him to do what only he can do. And so We just want to wrap up today by doing what we've done every week of this series, just by offering a time for you to reflect and to pray, to be prayed over. I would hope that this would become a house of prayer, meaning not only that you would you come down front to receive prayer for prayer counselors, but even just praying with your friends and family right where you are in the seats around you. You just huddle up and pray. I would hope that our church, at no matter what location, we would say, you know what? It is really hard to go to that church without being prayed over. That we just know, like I'm voicing something in the lobby. Hey man, I'm not just gonna tell you I'm gonna pray for you. I'm gonna pray for you right now. And maybe right now you need to be prayed for, you need to be prayed over. And we just wanna pray that the gardener would meet us right where we are and give us the strength. And let me just finish with this. You owe it to yourself and to others and to God to be at your optimal best. Your physical, your emotional, your spiritual, because your life is on purpose. Your days are numbered and they count, they matter, and God has placed you in this place and in this time to bring a contribution that nobody else can make, only you. And he wants you to be at your optimal best. So let me pray for you. Father, we love you, we thank you. Thank you for being the master gardener that tends to the weeds in our garden, and we don't have to hide this from you. We just need to be real. And so, Father, I just pray for those who are, they've got a heavy load right now. Single parents, business owners, people in high-stress jobs. I just pray that you would sustain them. I pray that they would see the meaning in their work. I pray that you keep their tanks full. I pray that you give them wisdom to know how to navigate their replenishment cycles. God, for those who are just burned out, they realize they are firmly fixed in that right side of that category that we looked at a few moments ago. God, I pray that you would, just like you did with Elijah, you would meet them right where they're at in it and walk them through it. Strengthen them, God, so that that way they could get back up on their feet and keep going. We ask this right now in Jesus' name.